Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how you doing?
I'm all right, mate. I'm just staying out of trouble, giving love to my haters, and just relaxing, really, because it's nearly the weekend. I mean, it is the weekend, and I'm, looking forward to it.
Pete, do you have any tattoos?
Do I have any tattoos? Yes, I have several tattoos.
Do you have any Japanese tattoos?
I have tattoos tattooed by a Japanese man in his house in Ebisu.
But no characters?
But no characters, no. I do not trust them. I do not trust kanji. And I think I do not trust the way that some of the very pretty and beautiful ornate symbolism. I do like it, but I don't trust it because it can mean so many different things and words change, you know.
Well, I remember a few months ago I talked on this podcast to you and everyone about getting a tattoo myself. It was something profound and
right.
Brilliant, the sort of thing that I would definitely have
yes.
on my arm. But I didn't do it because I'm still weighing up whether or not I want a tattoo. Because I often go in hot springs, and as you know, in Japan, hot springs plus tattoos equals not going in the hot spring. But there was obviously a rather big story this past few weeks with a certain Ariana Grande, and my voice appears to be going slightly so I talk more and more.
Look, you're so excited about Ariana Grande, your voice starts to go, your heart starts to have palpitations. I understand it, Chris. You're a young man. For a man who's a little bit older, I look at Ariana Grande, there's nothing for me there. She looks like a little child cat. And any man of my vintage who finds Ariana Grande attractive or interesting or captivating, I always think, yeah, maybe.
Well,
maybe don't take your hard drives into PC world, mate. Just a bit weird.
Oh God! I mean, I don't really like her music, but I acknowledge that she has a good voice. She has a good singing voice.
Oh, she's great. She's good. She does some very interesting pop music. A lot of jazzy. Yeah. That jazzy number with who's that rapper with the big bum? Can't remember her name. But she does some great songs. She seems very. Well put together and intelligent, and she's got a good. She's got good people around her who create some great pop music.
And she's also got a tattoo on her hand, which means mini charcoal grill as well.
Oh dear!
She made the classic error of going somewhere, or I don't really know how this happened. I think she wanted the phrase Nanatsu no Yubiwa, which means seven rings, which is the name of her song or her album, but either herself or the tattoo artist messed it up and just wrote Shichirin, which means small charcoal barbecue. To be honest, that is the sort of thing I would have tattooed on my hand, because who doesn't like a small charcoal barbecue? But it caused quite a stir, and it led to her claiming that she was going to stop learning Japanese.
Oh.
I didn't know she was learning Japanese, but she seems to have an appreciation for Japanese culture. She loves Japan, but on Twitter, she was very vocal. She said, I'm going to stop taking lessons. It's something that brings me joy and I'm passionate about, but I'm not going to do it anymore. Stuff it. So that's kind of sad, isn't it? All because of this backlash against her terrible tattoo.
Yeah, it just seems like she's obviously got an appreciation for the culture and appreciation for the language, certainly, because she does lessons and stuff. But, like, I mean, I understand when people get on your back, and the problem is she's incredibly famous, and whatever she does, you know, if she does a burp out of a window, that is reported for days and days and days. This is a bit of a misstep, and if my friend did it, I would have a little giggle at them. But, you know, it's the kanji is actually is obviously very hard to, you know, you can sort of read it, but then there's also, like, cultural significance to language, isn't there? Which he obviously didn't appreciate at the time. And I can't imagine sort of looking at the homework she tweeted out. She's not quite at the level where she's even using kanji, so she probably doesn't really have a handle on that either. But bless her, she's really got angry about it. Went, right, fine, I'm never leaving learning Japanese again. Fuck you.
She took Japanese merchandise down as well, sadly.
Oh, did she? Right, okay.
Yeah. Lots of Japanese fans on Twitter were tweeting about how they're scared that she hates Japan now. Even though I think most of the backlash was just coming from the West.
Non-Japanese.
I think it was coming from everyone except Japan. Japanese people are quite accepting, I think, towards tattoos going wrong. I didn't see any Japanese criticism. It was mainly just everyone else just making fun
massively
of it, because it's a common thing, you know. Who doesn't like to make fun of somebody who's cocked up the kanji, you know, because it's quite a bold thing to do. If you're gonna do it, you've got to do it right. I'm a little bit sympathetic to her, to be honest.
Well, I've heard a lot about this story because my name is Pete Donaldson. She used to go out with a man called Pete Davidson. Now, I don't know whether Pete Davidson's not on Twitter or people are just bloody stupid, but a lot of Americans seem to find it fascinating to, when they're tweeting basically about Ariana Grande, they'll type in Pete Da or Pete Do, Pete D, and they'll just find my profile. And so they'll write something criticising Pete Davidson or Ariana Grande or something, and then they'll CC me in thinking that I'm Pete Davidson. Ariana Grande's ex. So I'm constantly getting a stream of Grande fans.
Right.
Actually, weirdly, I was watching an interview where she was talking about her life, and she actually pronounces her name Grande, even though nobody calls her Grande. Ariana Grande.
Grande.
Yeah, there we go.
Is that actually a real name?
Yeah, I think it's her grandad. I think it's a granddad's. I don't really know. I half read things. It's not really. I seem to know a lot about Ariana Grande after going on about how little I care about Ariana Grande. Oh dear God! Oh,
you're
no!
I've
absolutely muffed this up, haven't I? Yes, I am president, the secret president of Ariana Grande's fan club. I know so much about her. I'm constantly tweeting. I changed my name to Pete Donaldson just so I could be close to Pete Davidson, her ex-bo. Thank you, next, etc.
You heard it here first. You heard it here first, folks. Pete Donaldson loves Ariana Grande. We didn't come here today to talk solely about Ariana Grande. Rather, people who've encountered confusing aspects of Japanese culture and how they dealt with them. And that's just one example, the classic kanji tattoo scenario.
Yeah.
But we've got some fantastic stories and emails sent in through the fax machine from you guys with your experiences across different aspects of Japanese culture. And the first one is from Marie. Do you want to read it out, Pete?
I can read that out.
My coffee.
Oh, you shouldn't, again, you shouldn't be drinking coffee this late. What's wrong with you? Can you hear the ding-dong bells outside my house? I live behind a churchyard, and the church bells are ringing out for 11 o'clock in the morning as the sun streams down into my room, into my kitchen. All right, this is from Marie. Hello, Marie. Hey, Chris and Pete. My name is Marie. I'm a 24-year-old student from Berlin. I went travelling with a friend around Japan last September. Sushi is my favourite food, and I've been eating it since I was two. a lot of mercury for a two-year-old, eh? But my dilemma is I can't really eat properly with chopsticks. My friend and I went to Tsukiji Fish Market and sat down in one of those little sushi restaurants. 12 seats maximum. I was very excited. My first time eating sushi in Japan. The man preparing the sushi placed it in front of me on a banana leaf, but he was quite quick, and the leaf began to fill up, so I had to start eating faster, otherwise there would be no space left for the sushi that kept coming. I reached for the chopsticks. I tried to lift a nigiri, but the sushi rice was very light, so the nigiri fell apart. Since I don't have the most delicate chopstick skills, the owner noticed me struggling and started talking to me very loudly in Japanese. She came over and kept pointing at the chopsticks. At this point, everyone was looking at me while I was trying to deal with this chopstick sushi interaction. She then tried to explain to me in Japanese how to eat with them. Other customers and the chef joined in. Nobody could really speak English. Most people ended up joining the discussion, in inverted commas, and the man sat next to me started trying to feed me the sushi. I kept declining this offer and just sat there and smiled through my shim, slowly dying inside. In the end, I did finish the sushi, but it wasn't the zen first experience I was hoping for. Great sushi though. Did you ever struggle eating with chopsticks, Chris, or have a similar uncomfortable eating experience in Japan?
You could probably empathise with that, Pete. We all know that you're not exactly the master of chopsticks.
Well, I thought out of all of my friends, I was probably the best at chopsticks, but turns out I use chopsticks. I get everything in my mouth. I managed to do little pincers and get it in my mouth, but apparently it's not the correct way to do the old chopsticks. I mean, I write strangely. If you ever see me with a pen, it looks very, very bizarre. They never taught me right.
I remember seeing you in Osaka with those chopsticks. Thank God you wear glasses, because you could have nearly taken your eye out where your chopstick skills were going. This story reminds me of my first trip to Skiji, where I was really hungover. I'd stayed up all night doing karaoke till 5 a.m. And then my friend and I went down to Skiji Market for the first time. And there used to be quite a few little sushi restaurants dotted around. And we went in and got the big bloody morning sushi set. And back then I wasn't really acquainted with the ways of sushi. And I remember just trying not to be sick for 90 minutes as I waft down these big, weird, bizarre pieces of sushi. It wasn't like nice bits like tuna and salmon. It was like octopus and squid and horror. And it wasn't fun. And that was like one of my first experiences with sushi. It was horrible. But the idea of someone trying to feed you sushi at a sushi counter, I'd love to have seen that play out.
It's a bit much, isn't it?
How would that work? Did someone just pick up the sushi and feed it to her, or did they like pick it up with their own chopsticks and like put it to her mouth? Like, what? How did that work?
I mean, didn't you tell me once that the don way to eat sushi is with your hands anyway?
Well, yeah, it sounds like it. But this place you went to, apparently they didn't do that for some reason. I don't know. Weird sushi place, but yeah, a lot of cool people do it with their hands. I'm not cool enough to do that. I do just use chopsticks. But what a lot of people do, I did go, when I was back in the UK, I went for sushi with a friend in London to one of the few places that do sushi that's good. It's called Sushi Samba. It's in a skyscraper in London. And we went there, and he made the cardinal sin of taking the sushi, you know, piece of nigiri sushi, tuna, and dipping it into the soy sauce, rice down. And I argued with him. I was like, what are you doing? This isn't how you eat sushi. What you do is you turn it over and you dab a little bit of the fish in the soy sauce, kind of marinate it very gently, and then in it goes. He was like, no, this is the way you do it. You marinate it. And he seemed to act as though he knew what he was doing. And what happened was, as he picked up the sushi, it just exploded everywhere. All the rice fell apart into the sushi bowl. He couldn't pick it up, and it was a nightmare. And he's still maintained that he was right and I was wrong, even though I'd lived in Japan for 6 years. But
yeah, well, it's just like it's the best thing about sushi and the best thing about rice based dishes in Japan is they use that beautiful rice wine or whatever wine they use to kind of in this actual rice itself, it has a beautiful delicate flavour. So once you dab it into the soy sauce, it just absorbs the soy sauce, and it's like a capillary reaction, just soaks the entirety of the block of rice in soy, and it's like, oh god, this is horrible. So yeah, I understand why they sort of rotate said block of sushi and dip the thing.
Don't make that mistake, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, it's an easy mistake to come by. I mean, it took me a while to work out, but yeah, the soy sauce is there to marinate a little bit of the sushi, not to dip the rice in. Please don't do that. Don't ruin your sushi. And I hope you've got better at chopstick skills.
It sounds so intense.
Sounds like you can't get much worse.
Just getting bothered while she eats.
Poor Marie. Another one from Leah. Liar? How do you pronounce that? L-I-A-H.
I'd go with Leah, just simply because
Leah it is.
The word liar is not great, is it?
Sorry, I quite like the word liar. Yeah. Anyway, hello, Chris and Pete. My name is Leah. I live in New York City, the non-skyscraper part.
Ah.
No. And I listen to your podcast while walking my dog. Oh, that's lovely. I'm curious about something I noticed on my trip to Tokyo and Kyoto last year. Every business I visited had a small plastic tray near their cash register. I got the indication that I was supposed to place my money on it to pay for my purchase, rather than hand the money directly to the person. What is the purpose of that tray, and what is the custom when handing money to someone in Japan? Thank you, guys. Love the podcast. Leah, not liar. you know about the tray, right, Pete?
I believe it is where you put the money, and then they return the change to the tray because they don't want to put it directly into your hand, because that shows, I think, some kind of disrespect, some kind of subservience that I'm paying you somehow. As a cashier, you don't want to be doing that. Mm. And I learnt that because of the TV show Ghostwriter from the 90s, where... I think it might very well have been a Korean family ran like a little off-license kind of 7-Eleven. And one of the other kids' father would get really angry because the dad would never put the money into his hands. He would always put it on the counter. And then the Korean kid basically explained that in the East, it's more, it's disrespectful to put money directly into someone's hands because it's like you're paying them. So if you put it on the counter, that's less disrespectful, apparently. But I could be wrong.
I never actually really thought about it. I think it's mainly for convenience.
Hmm.
Like, I went for a coffee today that was 200 yen, and I paid with a 10,000 yen bill because I had no small change or anything.
Mm.
It's quite embarrassing. so I put the bill down on the little tray, and then they counted all the money out and all the change, and they gave it back to me in the tray. And it's just more convenient for them to pick up the money and put it down, I think.
Yeah.
So there's no germs being passed around, apart from the tray, which will be filled with germs. And it's just easier when handing coins around, I think, to just put it in the tray and be able to pick it up and stuff. So I think it's mainly out of convenience than anything, because trying to pick money up off the counter is a nightmare without a little tray. And I think it's convenience. Yeah.
The most important thing about the little tray is it's got little rubber hairs. I'd sort of say little rubber bumps where you kind of it's much easier to grab coins and stuff. If you put it on the counter, it's actually quite hard to pick up coins, obviously, but if you put it in the little rubber tray, it's got this delightful little filaments that allow the coins to float a couple of millimeters off the ground, off the table, and it's all rather charming.
All hail the rubber hair floating coin box.
I don't even know what you call
just remember
them.
If you come to Japan and you see the tray in front of you at a till, that's what you use. That's where you put the money. And then you win.
Then you win.
Japanese culture.
I win. Thank you, Mr. Emperor, for my medal.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mm.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Are you a YouTuber?
Wow.
Hello to Bobby. Bobby's got in touch. Hi, Chris and Pete. I was in Kyoto, walking home to my Airbnb after going out to dinner. And I was stopped at the local family mart by some random Japanese dude in his 20s. He spoke barely any English but asked for my name. I replied with my name, presumably Bobby, and he answered, "You my new Canadian friend." And then he went inside and bought a Meiji chocolate bar. I said, "Thank you." He said, "You're welcome," and just walked away into the distance.
Brilliant.
Well, I like how Bobby's having a really kind of unrealistic experience of Japan. It's just, this guy just bought me a chocolate bar. Maybe it was Valentine's Day.
What I like most about that story is there's no proof to suggest that Bobby is in fact Canadian. He only asked for his name, apparently. "You my new Canadian friend." "I'm not Canadian." "Shut up, you're my friend. Have some chocolate. Bye."
It's like that old that old disgraced comedian Louis C.K. when he did a gag about American Indians, as in Native Americans. But when the settlers arrived in America, they went, "Is this India?" And they go, "No, this is America." And they go, "Ah, you're Indian." We'll go with that. It's so disrespectful. "We'll call you Indians." Well, we're not, though, are we? We're not. Oy, oy, oy.
We had an interaction like that a few weeks ago, didn't we? Seems to be a common one. Do you speak that was it. A few weeks ago, somebody told us the story of how they were in Kagoshima. Mm. And somebody walked up to them and said, "Can you speak English?" And then they went, "Yeah." And then the person went, "Great, bye," and then walked off. These sort of interactions. I've never had an interaction like that. The weirdest interaction I ever had was I went to an onsen once. And I came out, and there was a man, probably in his 50s or 60s, and he just walked over and went, "Hello, I have a cherries," and then just gave me some cherries and walked off with a box of cherries. And,
wow.
It was great. I love cherries.
Yeah.
Don't know why I got them.
I mean, you would be so easy to poison, Chris. That's all I'm saying. You would be so easy to poison. It's almost like a fairy tale. That's how the princess slept for 100 years or whatever, because she ate the rotten
apple. Of cherries.
Mmm, cherries, delicious, and now I'm asleep for 100 years.
I remember, well, you say that, I am probably a bit stupid. I remember I was at an event once, an event where lots of viewers turned up, and there was about 100 viewers, and this woman just came up to me with some sort of baked cake, some sort of cake in a box, and was just like, "Here, Chris, have a cake, I baked it for you, eat it now." And everyone watched me, like, unbox this cake, and I awkwardly was like, "Am I going to eat the cake?" And I, like, took a bite and I went, "Oh, you're a tasty cake." And it dawned on me, could have had cyanide in it. And it could have been my last bite ever. But luckily, she wasn't weird. She was just trying to get some publicity for her bakery in Tokyo, which is a little bit sneaky.
Sneaky.
I'm pretty silly. Shouldn't have eaten the cake, really.
Eat the cake. Isn't that Portal 2? There will be cake or something. I don't know. Oh, dearie me. Lovely old job. Do you want the next email? Actually, you're on the next email. Read it out. Read the fax machine. Get in the fax machine, Chris.
I'm the one
I'm working
you. All right. "Hi, guys. I love listening to the podcast on the cold evenings here in Nagasaki. I once went into a pachinko parlour and sat down next to an old woman who looked part of the furniture." I know what he means. Like, pachinko parlours. There seems to be a lot of elderly people there just alone.
Yeah.
Killing time and blowing their bank accounts. Anyway, I told myself, don't leave with any cash, otherwise the addiction would start. So I started playing and things were happening, but not knowing any Japanese, I was missing a lot. And the woman next to me just sat there laughing as everything happened on the machine and the balls went around. Suddenly, the machine started violently shaking and I heard some of the Japanese locals behind me saying, "Sugoi!" which means incredible. I had no clue what was going on. The machine then dropped something. in the middle of the screen, and it started going crazy. The woman next to me looked so angry as the words "super lucky winner" came on the screen. super lucky winner. I just wanted to spend my 1,000 yen and leave, but no. For 20 minutes, the balls were coming out, and I honestly didn't want to leave with anything, so I started to hand out pachinko balls by the cupload to the locals. There was a long queue, and the security guard was looking at me like, what is this foreigner doing? But I had to give them all away. 25 minutes later, I had given out all my pachinko balls and made many locals very happy, and that was the day I became the legend of the stupid foreigner who gave away a crazy amount of money. James from London, living in Nagasaki.
I wonder how much cash he gave away. That's incredible.
Probably 500 yen. You're not actually allowed to give out pachinko balls. There's a rule that you're not allowed to give them to people. Cash them in. So he broke the rules, hence why the security guard was probably looking at him. I can attest to the fact that these machines do give out money, or do give out the balls, for 20 minutes at a time sometimes if you do hit the jackpot. And it's really inconvenient and annoying because you need to have like a bucket.
Yeah.
You need to have like three buckets on standby. You kind of put them in the machine and then all the balls come out. You quickly move the bucket, get the next one, put it in, more balls come out. But for like 1,000, I can't remember what the rates were, but I think one ball equals 4 yen, something like that, from what I remember.
Oh, so it's not that much. So it's just not that much. Yeah.
Not a lot at all. It's pretty disappointing when you actually... I remember doing it and getting like 1,000 balls and then finding out it was like nothing, and I was quite underwhelmed. But
when all those balls still, sort of come out, you're sort of like, it's satisfying for all the balls to come out and exciting, but then if it's not really worth much, it's like, can we get on with this, please? I need to keep on playing, please. It's such a rubbish kind of way of getting around the gambling rules of Japan. All these balls just flying at you.
Well, you know, like, for those of you listening who don't know pachinko, I did make a good video on it last year. Do check it out. I think it's just called Japan's Greatest Gaming Obsession, pachinko. But with pachinko, what you do, you take your balls and you trade them in for, like, a coupon. And because gambling isn't allowed in Japan, you take the coupon to, like, a different shop around the corner where they pay you money for the coupon. It's a rather weird process, isn't it? It's and yet, pachinko is worth billions to the Japanese economy.
So. Yeah.
It's no laughing matter.
I guess so, it's well done, James. It's kind of isn't it all owned by a lot of them companies are all owned by Korean companies quite a lot.
Yes, I think that's right. Actually, a lot of Koreans own pachinko in Japan because I think historically in the 50s and 60s, Koreans had a lot of trouble trying to find work in Japan due to discrimination and whatnot. So a lot of them turned to pachinko as a means of living. So yeah, you find that a lot of pachinko parlors are still to this day owned by Korean families who are very rich, of course.
Yeah, it's shiny balls.
Do try it though if you come to Japan. It's worth
Do you want the next email? James says, "Dear Chris and Pete, I was visiting Hiroshima and it was my birthday, and I went out with my girlfriend for my favorite food, sushi. We found a backstreet sushi bar that was low-key and parked ourselves at the bar. We were the only non-Japanese people there. The sushi chef produced the menu in English, and we ordered something fairly tame, tuna or salmon. As expected, it was excellent. And we ordered some more, perhaps some fried egg. After our second or third round, the chef placed in front of us a plate of octopus sushi. We hadn't ordered anything. We queried it, and the chef indicated that the man down the other end of the bar had ordered it for us. We nodded, raised our drinks to the man to thank him for his generosity, and then ate the sushi, which was excellent. After another round that we'd ordered, the chef produced another bonus dish, this time some kind of squid sushi. We looked at each other, smiled at the extremely generous man down the end of the bar, and ate it. On it went. More and more dishes started appearing in front of us, each more exotic and obscure than the last. We ate and drank, smiled and nodded, and generally had a great time. The dishes added up until I lost count around 20. Then the final course appeared in front of us, rice, with what the menu described as salty tuna guts. It sounded revolting, but I chomped it down with relish. Actually, it might have been my favourite. I turned to the man, only to see that he'd stood up. He looked me straight in the eye, threw both his arms above his head and shouted banzai at the top of his lungs before turning out and leaving the shop. Wow. It turned out what I'd interpreted as a generous local seeking to introduce a visitor to the world of sushi was actually a Japanese man who was trying to freak out the Westerner with some strange food before giving up and saluting me. After all of that, he didn't even pay for any of the sushi he ordered for me.
Oh,
James! Like,
that's awful.
If you're going to be ordering, I mean, he just sounds like a dick, that guy. But wherever you're from,
he really does.
In any language, that guy's a dick. But like, you need to be paying for that. You need to be paying for that sushi. Sushi's expensive, especially in Japan.
That's quite an unpleasant plot twist, isn't it? That he didn't pay for what I assume to be at least $50 worth of sushi.
Oh dearie
and
me!
To give poor James the salty tuna guts, which are shio kara, the one of the worst things in the world. I can't eat it, like, it without being like.
It's just tuna guts, basically. It's just the bits shot.
Can't eat it.
Well, he met his match, didn't he, that bloke? He met his match.
I'd like to say something good came out of this for James, but I don't know. What's the moral of the story, Pete? Don't accept food from people.
Yeah. Do. Or if you can do that emotionally, if you can get over that hump of, taking stuff off people without giving anything back, Japan seems to be the same, the place to be. Chocolate, free Meiji chocolate, and sushi, fish guts.
I wonder if he would have paid if James was, like, sick or just, like, gave up and didn't eat it then. There seems to be some sort of assumption, doesn't he, that this guy was expecting something terrible to happen.
Yes.
It didn't happen. He didn't feel like he got his money's worth, so he didn't pay.
I'm out of it.
That's basically how I interpret the story.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But it's not uncommon for people to pay for you, like strangers to pay for your drink or food. Mm. I've had it happen quite a lot over the years in various izakayas, particularly in the countryside, where foreigners are a rarity. People feel like, wow, you're foreign. I want to make a good impression about Japanese people, so have some free stuff, like cherries. So it's not uncommon, really.
Yeah,
but this is very uncommon to find a guy who's a dick who will give you loads of horrible food and then not pay. Ugh.
But like going back to like the chat about, I think I said Secret Santa. I always like to know who's bought me the Secret Santa so I can say thank you for it. People buying me drinks, I find it very difficult, so I always overcompensate and buy back. But yeah, in Japan, a couple of times people have sort of bought me drinks and food, and I just feel really bad. But it seems to be the custom.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. Mm. If you find yourself in an izakaya restaurant, ladies and gentlemen, and people do offer to buy you stuff, just say yes and just take what comes to you.
Just say yes, in the words of Snow Patrol.
Take the cherries. Enjoy the cherries.
Bite the cherries.
Enjoy the hospitality while you can. And don't worry, this is a rarity. People won't spend hundreds of dollars of money and like order you hundreds of dollars of food and then not pay for it.
No.
Although, if that does happen, send it in. Send the story in to abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. I want to hear more.
Yes.
I'm loving these stories. We've had some fantastic stories these last few weeks.
They're good, aren't they?
Keep them coming, guys. They're brilliant. I love it. This is what the podcast is just going to be now, just reading amazing stories. But for now, I think that's it, isn't it, Pete? It's time to hit the road.
I think we're done.
My coffee.
Time to mosey.
Stop being father figure, annoying father figure. Don't eat, don't drink coffee.
Stop drinking coffee. It's too late. You're going to be up all night.
I'm going to be up all night editing and building an empire that spans time and space.
All right, mate. Why don't you fire one of your bloody videos into space on a rocket like that, Div Musk? Like Musky.
I'll do it.
All right, darling.
Best friends of Elon Musk, so I can do it. Gave him a birthday cake once, which is true. Anyway, coffee time. No matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us on the Abroad Japan podcast. We'll be back same time next week, but for now, have a good one and just eat cherries. That's the one thing to take away from this.
Have some cherries, you silly sausages.
Even if they're not in season, eat the cherries. Eat them all.
Bite them.
Bye.
Bye.
This was a Radio Stakhanov production.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.